The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at The Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's The Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Book and Film Globe podcast. I am your host, Neil Pollack, the greatest living American writer and the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. We cover the worlds of books and film and streaming TV and so much more. And this is our 200th episode of the Book and Film Globe podcast. We've been doing this since 2021. We started recording on Clubhouse, which was kind of a party line phone app that was popular during the pandemic years. And I would get all of our contributors together and people would sort of raise their hands and talk about what they were watching that week. That lasted for a while. The sound quality was poor. Then we moved over to Skype, where the sound quality was also poor. And Skype no longer exists, so I'm glad we didn't stick with that. And since, I don't know how long, for the last 3 or 4 years, we've been recording on an app called Zencastr, which works extremely well, and we've been bringing you high-quality audio information and entertainment ever since then. But I also I hate to report that this is our 200th episode, but it's also our final episode, because I am leaving Book and Film Globe. I have accepted a position as the senior editor of the U.S. edition of The Spectator, which is a British publication also known as the world's oldest magazine. It's hard for me to believe that I got this gig, but I did, and I am excited for that. And I'm sad to leave Book and Film Globe behind, but it's for a good reason. And we're going to celebrate our final and 200th episode of the podcast by talking to our most frequent guest, film critic Stephen Garrett. We're going to review two new movies, The Phoenician Scheme from Wes Anderson and Ballerina, which is a spin-off of the John Wick series starring Ana de Armas. Both are very entertaining movies, well worth talking about. And Stephen and I are also going to recap our work that we've done since 2018 on Book and Film Globe. It has been a very fertile, in some ways. It's been a troubled period for movies, but there have been some really good films, and it's been well worth covering and talking about. And Stephen and I are going to talk for 30 or 40 minutes, and you're going to listen, and you're going to take notes, and there'll be a quiz afterwards, and your performance will determine whether or not you get to continue reading Book and Film Club. No, I'm kidding. Everything's fine. Just sit back and enjoy, and Stephen and I will be right back to talk about Wes Anderson's The Phoenician Scheme.
At this moment, rescue workers are laboring to recover and identify the remains of Zsa Zsa Korda. International businessman, maverick in the fields of armaments and aviation, among the richest men in Europe.
I recognize this assassin.
Go now.
Suicide pedal.
I've got Stephen Garrett's attention for the entire episode, and he is here to talk to me. We're gonna Siskel and Ebert it, basically, right?
Let's Stephen? No, we're not. Yes, we are. No.
Well, right. If we ever disagreed about anything, then that would
disagreed.
Be the dynamic.
Well, I think we've disagreed.
Sometimes,
yeah, we've had our opinions. Let's put it that way.
We have our opinions, but it's generally been a pleasant relationship, and I thought that it'd be nice to take. First of all, there's a couple of movies that I really wanted to talk about this week, but I also thought, you know, this is it. This is the end of the Book and Film Globe podcast, Stephen. And
Wrapping it up.
So who better to have on the show than our lead film critic, our chief film critic, Stephen Garrett?
Well, I'm very flattered and honored, and also very sad that you are moving to the next chapter of your life, which I'm very happy that you are, but it's a loss for us.
Oh, thank you, Stephen. This has been a long chapter. It's one of those chapters when you're reading a book, you know, you're like, is this chapter over yet? I need to go to the bathroom. It's gripping. I don't want to put down the Kindle, but I really do need to pee.
We enjoyed reading that chapter. Neil Pollack.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you very much. All right, so let's talk about some movies that are in theaters now, at least for the next couple of weeks, which is kind of how movies work in theaters these days. I saw them both over the weekend, and you saw one of them at Cannes and one of them last week. But we're going to talk first about Wes Anderson's. I feel like we talk about a Wes Anderson movie every year.
He's been making a lot. Yeah, he's made probably, what, 4 or 5 in the past 8 years.
Yeah, he's been very prolific. His new movie is called The Phoenician Scheme. And I don't know. I mean, I feel like his last movie, Asteroid City, was such a mannered, I liked it, but it was such a mannered experiment. It felt like a play, and in fact was framed as a play within the context of a movie theater. Whereas I feel like The Phoenician Scheme is a little more cinematic, as Wes Anderson movies go.
Yeah, I mean, I hated Asteroid City. I absolutely hated it from the first frame, and it was the worst of all of his mannerisms. And I felt like I had an allergic reaction. The first time I felt that was the previous film, French Dispatch, where I really couldn't stand it. I could not stand it. And I just thought, all right, well, I guess the worm has turned, and the last movie I'll ever like of his would be, you know, Grand Budapest. I was starting to feel it a little with Moonrise Kingdom, where I was just like, yeah, I don't think this guy's speaking to me or my interests anymore. And then I heard word that Phoenician Scheme was actually a good one, and very instantly within the first first minute, that first scene, you know, when they're in the plane and that guy gets blown out, you know, and ripped in half, I was like, oh, great. Okay. This is a different type of Wes Anderson movie. And I really enjoyed it quite a lot.
It reminded me of Grand Budapest Hotel in a lot of ways. It had, because that movie had a sense of history, and unlike a lot of Wes Anderson movies, it had a very intricate plot. And there were, you know, MacGuffins and schemes, and you know, there were things happened continually, and I felt like that was the case with the Phoenician scheme as well. You know, I mean, I as my wife said after we were done watching it, she's like, you know, I had no idea what was going on at any point, but I enjoyed it. You know, like the fact that like there was a plot that kind of dragged these characters along gave the movie a kind of a. Give it some energy that at times I feel like Wes Anderson movies lack.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like French Dispatch was, you know, made in a way to feel like a series.
An old magazine, an old New Yorker magazine. Like, it was so dreary.
I mean, first of all, reading a New Yorker magazine is an arch experience out of the gate. So you're watching a Wes Anderson movie in the style of a New Yorker magazine, like that's already so twee and mannered that it's it kind of hurts my teeth. And it meanders because you're like, what is the point of this aside from just splashing around in this little, world,
fake magazine.
And then Asteroid City was basically a hangout movie, right, with a bunch of people stuck in one place, and then they're all,
they didn't have a good song, there was a good musical number in it, but I agree with you on Asteroid City as well.
They're just like, they're steeped in their own, you know, melancholy and their own, you know, odd worldview. And
great alien. There's some stuff, but I'm saying, but Phoenician Scheme as a film just kind of works. You know, it basically, Benicio del Toro plays a very wealthy European industrialist named Zsa Zsa Korda, which is the tweeest Wes Anderson name for a character imaginable. But he has this relationship with his daughter, who's played by Mia Threpleton, Kate Winslet's daughter, her first major role, right? She plays this sort of novitiate nun who gets dragged into he has a scheme, a Phoenician scheme to, I don't know if it's a scam or if he's legitimately trying to bring water and power to this Middle Eastern desert region. It's kind of hard to tell what his true intentions are, but
I mean, I think his intentions are just to make money, and you know, he's Mr. 5%, right? So if he can pull off this deal, and he says at a certain point in the movie, I'm going to get 5% for the next 100 every year for the next 150 years, you know. So I think he's thinking this is the last great sort of, you know, industrialist deal that I'm going to strike, and I don't quite have enough money to do it because he's kind of cashing everything out in order to pay for it, but he's still short. And so the scheme, I think, is for him to convince his other business partners, who were reluctant at best, to give more money. And then the whole movie is just a string of these encounters with these guys as he kind of puts his foot in it one after the next, you know,
where people keep trying to kill him. Yes. And then also along for the ride, who a character. Well, and let's keep in mind the U.S. government, some shadowy consortium in the U.S. government is
keeping
trying
tabs
to thwart,
and,
keep
and,
tabs or thwart him or murder him or all of the above. Also along for the ride on Zsa Zsa Korda's private airplane is Michael Cera, who is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
Really, really funny performance as a, well, at least he starts off as a Norwegian tutor who specializes in insects because Benicio del Toro's character adopts all these boys. It's like a Dark Sound of Music. Michael Cera, just every time he opens his mouth, his accent is so funny and his mannerisms are so funny. And he's so,
I mean, yeah, I think that's it. It's the key is Mia Thrapleton and Benicio del Toro and Michael Cera. Benicio was in one of, Wes Anderson's movies before, but the other two were new. And Benicio is such a different sort of actor and type of star to be in his movies, almost like Ralph Fiennes was to a certain extent. So the three of these really play off each other quite well. And the three of them yes. also seem to be like, what the hell are we doing in this movie? This movie is so twee, I can't stand it. You know, like they're almost calling bullshit on the mannerist kind of world in which they're kind of stuck. And Michael Cera yeah. almost is doing, I wouldn't say a parody of a Wes Anderson character, but he's exaggerated to the point where it almost feels self-knowing. And you know, there's a reveal a little later where it's obviously, you know, yeah. meant to be a pose, you know.
Well, no one ever called Michael Cera an unintelligent actor.
Right, right.
But this is one of his best numbers. Yeah, and I think the three of them give performances that, you know, they feel pretty committed to them, and it gives the movie a more emotional heft and depth than it might otherwise had. Benedict Cumberbatch plays the villain, and he's quite villainous, but he also doesn't appear to like the final 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, it's very short, it's brief, and then there's a weird fight scene, which is hilarious too, because when was the last time Wes Anderson like choreographed a fight scene? It was like hilarious.
Yeah, it was a decent fight scene too, I thought.
It wasn't bad. And also, what about the American, railway magnates? That was pretty funny. Bryan Cranston and
Tom Hanks playing basketball.
It really won me over. That basketball sequence, I was like, what the hell is this? This is so funny.
They play a game of horse in an underground tunnel in Saudi Arabia. It's like Lawrence of Arabia, but with horse.
Right, but it's also like Benicio del Toro's horrible at it, and Riz Ahmed's never played before, but he's like insisting that they do because he thinks they're going to win, and it's just like, what?
They can't win.
Meanwhile, Michael Cera and Mia are getting drunk in the
train.
I mean, it's all kind of weirdly charming in a way that I haven't found Wes Anderson's movies to be charming in years.
Yeah, so rarely does a Wes Anderson movie come along that I like, you know, The Grand Budapest Hotel, The Fantastic Mr. Fox, some of his earlier movies. And then this one, I think this has got to be in the upper half of the Wes Anderson filmography. It's kind of surprising.
I think, I think it's up there. And, you know, especially the end too, which is not sad or mournful or ends in some weird 60s dance with Foxes doing some like boogie woogie. I don't know. It actually was heartfelt. Like you had said, that there's this emotional energy that these three characters have that they bring to it, and they also bring to each other. And there's real heart in a way that's kind of, it's not a put on. It's not artificial. It's well earned, I think.
It's a good movie, you know, and that is The Phoenician Scheme from Wes Anderson, and it is in art houses and theaters in art housey type cities for you to view now, and will eventually be on streaming. A little less art housey is our second movie.
Eve McCarroll, what brings you here?
I'd like to go hunting.
You have no idea what you just walked into. You don't have to do this. You can still leave.
Why didn't you leave?
I'm working on it.
Our second movie is Ballerina, which is a spinoff of the John Wick saga, and stars Ana de Armas as a young woman bent on avenging the death of her father, who I guess was some sort of rogue assassin?
Well, it's weird. It's as, first of all, it's funny. Yes, it's not an art house film, but it is pretentious in its own delightfully ridiculous way. You know, it's very self-serious in its own odd way, the way that John Wick movies are. But she's the daughter of a cult of killers. And her parents want to get her out of the cult. And so in order to get her away from that cult of killers, she ends up in a troop of killers, that is the Ruska Roma, as a way of protecting her from this cult.
But they're not, they are killers with a code, like, because John Wick is a member of the Ruska Roma, and that's the family he belongs to, and Ana de Armas belongs to some other family that has a headquarters in some kind of alpine village where everyone is...
A real village.
Yes. Where is that? Is it in Austria?
It's in Austria in the mountains there, kind of north of the middle of Austria, like kind of outside of Salzburg.
Right, because the movie takes place basically in New York, Prague, and Austria. It's not as quite as globe-trotting as a typical John Wick movie. And you're right, it is very self-serious. On the other hand, as you point out, and there was a very clever bit when... Ana de Armas is going at it with someone in, not sexually, but like violent. There's no sex in this movie. It's all violence. Going at it violently, where the TV remote suddenly switches on.
That's right.
It's so great. And you see a flash of, there are three scenes. One is the scene in the Buster Keaton movie where the house falls over him.
Yeah.
And, he is standing in a doorway. There was a Three Stooges. Nyuk Nyuk bit, and then there was that scene from Airplane.
Oh, it's Airplane. Oh,
it's Airplane. Yeah, because you got the Girl Scouts beating each other up on the dance floor during the Saturday Night Fever sequence parody, and so you see those things flash through, and that to me reveals what this director Len Wiseman is really up to.
Yeah.
In Ballerina, which is essentially making a satirical action cartoon.
Yeah, yeah.
Very clever. Then there's also the thing that you pointed out in your review, where at one point Ana de Armas, you know, as always in these movies, she's like, I need some guns. So she goes to I think they're in Prague still. She goes to this arms dealer who is like in a...
Frank.
Seems to be
like... named Frank.
Well, he says... Can I be frank with you? And then then you see his name tag and his name is Frank. And I'm like, what? Len Wiseman saw a lot of Airplane. Like, that's a very Zucker Brothers joke.
That's a very Zucker Brothers joke. You're right.
Which is weird because I don't really consider Ana de Armas. I mean, first of all, she's one of the most beautiful women of our time. But I don't really consider her a comic actor.
She's pretty deadpan. She's good at deadpan, I think.
Is she doing it on purpose, though?
You know, as much as Leslie Nielsen is, you know what I mean? No, I mean, this isn't like a comedy, right? I mean, it's satiric in its moments.
No, it's a melodrama. It's a melodrama.
It's still a melodrama. And she has to play, you know, like tortured and haunted and vengeful.
I feel like the movie makes good use of Ana de Armas. She's lit well. She dresses cool, you know?
Oh, yeah.
She's like sexy, but not like overly sexualized.
But also, right? How much did you love the fact that she was not very good at fighting, at least initially in the movie, and she gets gradually better, but it's still sloppy. She gets her ass kicked a lot.
Yeah, well, again, this is the era of women getting thrown onto tables in movies. Gets thrown onto so many tables.
Jesus.
You know, and you see that over and over again, women getting thrown through windows or thrown through glass tables. I mean, the women fight back. She's not abused. She's abused, but she's not like... She's just fighting for her life. She's not being like abused by an abuser, but you know, it's a little, you just have to, I guess if you're going to tolerate like a man getting continually pummeled for an hour and 45 minutes, like, you know, if you can handle Keanu Reeves constantly getting his thrown down steps and stuff, I guess you should also tolerate Ana de Armas getting that treatment.
Right.
It was kind of it is not our job to promote films. Well, it actually is your job to promote films sometimes, but it wasn't your job to promote this film.
Right.
But, you know, it didn't do so well at the box office. I feel like it wasn't really advertised very well. You know, the John Wick movies are so popular, and Ana de Armas is, you know, She was in Knives Out. She was a star of Knives Out. She's a pretty popular movie star. I feel like they could have done a bit of a better job of like marketing this as like the summer's first big action movie. Well, the summer's second big action movie. Yeah, obviously, we have Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
But this is way better. But I would watch this. If somebody said you had to watch Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, or Ballerina again, you had to pick one, I would definitely watch Ballerina again. Over.
Oh, definitely. First of all, it's a lot shorter. But also, I think they whiffed it when they called it Ballerina. That's a stupid title. She's not even really much of a ballerina. We get that she's being trained. They could have called it
Eve. What is it? Eve.
Could have called it Eve.
Her name is Eve. Yeah,
exactly. It's a dumb title, and I think it's confusing to people, and they're just like, what?
Right. And I kept singing Tiny Dancer in my
exactly.
head.
Exactly. Yeah, the way that they used that in the trailer, which was idiotic. And then they try to like make it better. They band-aid it with this From the World of John Wick ballerina title, which is just like, wait, what?
There is a world of John Wick, and boy, are we living in it. But okay, so some issues with the marketing, but it's a good movie, and it is a nice treads the line really nicely between action and comedy. I thought so.
Ballerina, I think it does.
Another winner. All right, so now it is time. It is time, Stephen, for us to reckon with our opinions. From
Final Reckoning.
The Final Reckoning. So I consider this my Book and Film Globe has been in continual publication since the 1990s, which is a miracle for a website. The founder of the site initially conceived of it as a place for him to publish reviews of like indie rock biographies and graphic novels, alternative comics, stuff that he liked, occasional political pieces. And then I took it over in 2018. You were actually the first thing we published during my tenure was by you. It was a review of a movie called The Predator. Movies were bad.
Oh boy.
That was the original headline was The Predator Tries to Be Fun and Funny But Fails. And that was the first thing. But, you know, I consider 2018 to 2025, let's call it the Book and Film Globe era, you know, the time of my tenure. And you and I published, we have plenty of wonderful film critics, but you know, I published the most articles by far, of any of our contributors. So I went through and I combed through the archives to find the movies that you gave 5 stars to. So we wanted to determine what the best films of this era were of 2018 to 2025. I will say you were far more generous with the 5. First of all, you reviewed more movies than me, but you were far more generous.
I
with
love
the
movies.
5 stars.
I love movies.
I know.
But
I love movies too. But
there are movies I love more than you. There are certain movies.
You just reviewed more good movies. I was doing a lot of like, you know, sort of the second movie of the week. So I gave out a lot of 4 stars, but you gave out quite a few 5 stars. So let's first of all, before we start, we've been doing this for so long that we actually encompass the era of Avengers Endgame.
Right.
And which you gave 3 stars at the time. That's fine. I consider the first one of those two movies to be like probably the best superhero movie ever made. What was that one? What was Avengers Endgame? Was the sequel? What was the first one called? Avengers?
I don't know. Apparently, it was the best superhero movie ever, and you can't remember the title.
Final Reckoning. but those movies were significant, but those were not 5-star movies.
Infinity War? No, that's not.
Infinity War. Infinity War, to my mind, was the best, one of the best superhero movies
ever made. That was pretty good, you know, yeah. I think that was better than the Endgame.
Yes, agreed. Yeah. Agreed. All right, but neither of those received 5 stars in our estimation. Here's what did. A Star is Born.
Yeah.
The Bradley Cooper Star is Born.
I really like that.
I know.
Pleasantly surprised.
I guess. The Ballad of Buster Scruggs from the Coen Brothers. Heartily agree with you there. Steve McQueen's Widows, you gave 5 stars to.
Incidentally, Buster Scruggs turned out to be the last movie that the Coen Brothers made, and it does feel like a summary statement of their career.
Yeah, it is. It is an incredible film. Widows, sure. Widows. I feel like you're a little
and see that again.
Yeah, a little enthusiastic about Widows.
Might be
there.
Too enthusiastic. Yeah.
Happy as Lazaro, you gave 5 stars to.
Oh, I do like that.
Aliche, War Walker, an excellent film. A This was a movie, a Polish movie that was nominated for the Best Foreign Film Oscar called Cold War.
Cold War is great.
Yeah, yeah. Great movie. Now, I heartily disagreed with you about this one, Ryan Gosling as Neil Armstrong in First Man.
I know you did not like that the way I did. No. I really like that.
No, astronauts should not cry in movies.
There's no crying in space.
There's no crying in space. If there's one thing I've stood tall on during my time at Book and Film Globe, it's that astronauts should not cry.
Do you know what, though? In space, no one can see you cry.
No, that's not true. You can see Neil Armstrong cry, apparently. Neil Armstrong cried on the moon, apparently. Joanna Hogg's The Souvenir, you gave five stars
to? Amazing, amazing movie.
Agreed. Now, you gave this four stars, but I think this is one of just the best American films ever made. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Once Upon a Time in America. That's also a five-star movie. But
you know what, though? Look, I think five-star reviews, anytime somebody gives the maximum stars, whoever it is, it is character revealing. It's not so much about objectively this is an excellent film more than it is let me explain to you why this movie thrills me as a person, you know, because I think most movies are like most great movies are 4 out of 5 stars because you can't please everybody.
But Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, not only was it just like these epic star turns from DiCaprio and Brad Pitt, it also Tarantino's cast of the Manson family, which included Maya Hawke, Margaret Qualley, Mikey Madison. I mean, and on and on. He just has such an eye. There's so many memorable scenes. I've seen that movie a half dozen times, and it only came out in 2019. So that's a lot. Highest marks for me.
I get bored at the ranch. I get bored at the ranch. He milks that, and it goes from being also has that woman from Girls. What's her name?
Alina Dunham.
Alina Dunham. It's very tense and full of dread, and then I get bored.
All right.
And that's fine, why it doesn't work for me. Also, he fetishizes his own fetishes, and I just don't have time for it. Tarantino hasn't made a perfect movie since Pulp Fiction, in my estimation.
I disagree with
you. And all of his
movies
are vengeance movies, and I'm not, I just don't like vengeance movies.
I think Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is a perfect movie. I've also read the book. I saw it at his New Beverly Theater in LA on Melrose there. And I just, you know, there were special trailers. I have a Cliff Booth Hollywood stuntman button. I have a Brandy Cliff Booth's dog. My wife has a button of that. There's no amount
you're also illustrating my point, which is the movie is much more about world building and fetishizing all of his favorite little things than it is telling a good story. Cause I just don't think the story.
I
put this in the review. It is his most conservative movie. It's very much in the sense of the world is changing. I don't want it to change. What is my place in this world now?
Tarantino is kind of a conservative. He was on the Joe Rogan podcast. He's not your wokest of filmmakers. There's no question about that. All right, we're going to move on, though. You give a lot of movies 5 stars. Talk about that movie forever. Midsommar.
I love movies. Midsommar's fantastic.
Yeah. I can't disagree with you about Midsommar. Also, you gave 5 stars to Martin Scorsese made a documentary about Bob Dylan, Rolling Thunder Express, sort of. You gave five stars to that.
Oh, did I give that?
Yeah, I know. That might have been an okay boomer moment for you. Speaking of documentaries, documentaries that we gave 5 stars to, I loved that Peter Jackson made a World War I documentary based on found footage that I reviewed for us, and I gave that 5 stars.
I felt like I was getting old watching that.
But. Yeah, I got very. I like a good nap in the middle of a movie, and that provided it. I reviewed this one. I gave 5 stars to Parasite, which is not a big stretch.
Parasite is a great movie.
One of the great movies of all time. Marriage Story, Noah Baumbach's Marriage Story. You gave 5 stars.
Yeah,
to?
I did.
Sure,
I did.
Why not? Highly emotional.
Yeah, I would also say that in giving 5 stars, I'm going to get a little reflective here. If I'm asked to evaluate movies, which is always hard on a star system, like what does it mean? 1 star, 2 stars, you know, whatever. I tend to go, you know, bad, good, great. I evaluate what is the movie trying to do? You could have a 5-star slasher movie.
Sure.
If it's a really great slasher.
Sure, of course.
It doesn't mean that it's Lawrence of Arabia, but 5 stars is, did it achieve what it was trying to do? And so if I can humbly submit that in this context.
Yeah, you can humbly submit it.
Because it sounds like I gave a lot of five
you
stars.
You can humbly admit that, but a lot of your five stars were still like art house movies. You know, I loved that movie Companion that came out recently. But that was.
Would you have given it?
No, I gave that four. I mean, it had its flaws. All right, well, we got a lot more here.
I know. Sorry, we're up to like 2021 now.
It sounds like you gave a lot of movies. You just reviewed a lot of movies, and this was 7 years worth. So, you know, The Lighthouse, Robert Eggers, The Lighthouse. You gave five
amazing.
Stars. Yeah, another Martin Scorsese film, The Irishman.
So good. Irishman. I was amazed. It's so long, but I just loved it. I loved its length. It earned it.
Both excellent films. Another strong point of disagreement for me. Ad Astra. You gave Ad Astra five stars. And that's another astronauts crying in space. Can't do it.
No one can see you cry.
No, can't do it. Uncut Gems.
Come on.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. Amazing. I'm not going to argue with you too much about that.
That was a great year.
2019 was kind of the last great year for films.
It was
because then, you know, we got hit with COVID. I personally did not get hit with COVID, but society got hit with COVID. And then there were some strikes. There's been a lot. The movie industry has been up against a lot. So 2019, I can kind of feel like is like the last great year. Because I was looking, 2020, there was not much. You give a movie called The White Tiger five stars. That's sort of an
eight. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Man, that's good.
Yeah.
I was really surprised by that. Yeah.
Good movie. Sound of Metal, which was an Oscar-nominated film. Speaking
that's
of Riz Ahmed,
a great movie.
Yeah, excellent boy. Movie about a rock and roll drummer who loses his hearing. This is one of my personal favorites, Licorice Pizza.
Oh yeah,
I've seen that a couple of times since I initially viewed it.
Have you? Yeah, does it hold up?
Oh yeah, yeah. That's all, you know, like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's also kind of a hangout movie. You know,
it is a hangout movie.
It's a hangout movie. It's a vibe movie. But Paul Thomas Anderson just, it's really to say that's one of his best is saying a lot because he doesn't make duds. But Licorice Peach is just it's a delight. The second time through, I loved it again. I would watch that. Maybe not once a year, but a lot. I gave five stars personally to Titan.
Yeah.
The French Palme d'Or movie about the woman who gives birth to a car.
Crazy.
My mother, not my mother, the car, my mother. Who gave
Somebody's mother, the car. I mean,
that was that we talked about that movie. I think that the substance, which you gave four stars to, excuse me, my voice for changing there, but you gave four stars to The Substance, which I don't think would have been possible without Titan's influence, both sort of female centered body horror movies.
True. Titan was definitely groundbreaking.
For sure. Steven Spielberg's West Side Story and Spielberg's The Fablemans, both.
I know. That's weird. And I'm not a huge fan of Steven Spielberg. So I gave those with a sort of, not begrudgingly, but with great respect. Like, okay, yeah, I can't see anything wrong with these movies.
There's nothing wrong with either of them. I do feel like those are kind of, those are career awards on your part because neither one of them were particularly popular. Spielberg has gone from being like the ultimate Hollywood blockbuster director to being sort of an art house figure in his later years as a director. But we got to.
I don't know. Warhorse was awful. And Ready Player One, I'm sure, made a lot of money, but that was awful. He's had a lot of bad movies.
For sure. All right. We're gonna have to run through this fast. The Banshees of Inisherin, you gave five stars to.
Oh, yeah.
Can't really argue with that. You gave four stars to Tar. I would add that extra star to Tar just for the ending.
You would, really?
The ending alone.
Oh, okay.
The ending alone.
Nice.
You gave four stars to Top Gun Maverick, or maybe even three, but you get that. Yeah.
Really? I thought I gave that five.
Maybe.
I gave that four.
A key movie of this era, Top Gun Maverick.
Oh, for sure.
I'm not a huge fan of them, but you know, this has been the era of the Knives Out movies. You can't really talk about movies of this era without discussing the Knives Out movies. Both of those got four stars. You gave a five stars to Bones and All, which is the Luca Guadagnino, Timothy Chalamet,
like Luca.
Cannibal. All right, you like Luca. You like Luca so much, you also gave five stars to Queer.
Right, but not to Challengers. I think I only gave.
Oh, but I would give it to Challengers in a second. Right? That's my favorite of those three by far.
It's quality.
May December. Todd Haynes is May December. Four stars to Killer of the Flower Moon. Killer of the Flower Moon. But if you're gonna give the Irishman five stars,
I disagree. It didn't earn its length. Irishman earned its length.
Late period Scorsese is still better than early period almost any other director on earth. Oppenheimer. Probably the single best film of the era. Maybe not the one I'm going to watch again.
and I think the best picture in a long time. like, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No one was arguing about that. Neither of us actually reviewed Barbie. I think Sarah Stewart reviewed Barbie for us, and she gave that 5 stars, and you can't really, you know, a significant film.
Significant, for sure, yes.
Important. I wouldn't have given it 5 personally. You gave it 5 stars to Dune Part 2.
Hell yeah. And to Part 1, didn't I? Or did I only give that 4?
Part 1 got 4.
I think Part 2 is better.
There's a few others. I mentioned The Zone of Interest and Warfare, both of which I thought were incredible.
Yeah.
You never saw Warfare. I kept trying to get you. I also loved.
Didn't I have to see it?
I also loved Portrait of a Lady on Fire. And,
I love that. 5 stars. Five stars.
I gave 4 stars to Nicolas Cage and Pig, but boy, what a movie that was. And there's a French adaptation of the Balzac movie, Lost Illusions. That I simply loved. There have been some good French literary adaptations. There was a terrific two-part adaptation starring Vincent Cassel of The Three Musketeers.
Yeah.
And then on an airplane recently, I watched a new adaptation of The Count of Monte Cristo that was...
Which I hear is good.
Real swashbuckling and fun. The French paying homage to their literary pulp history. Emilia Perez, you're wrong. The Brutalist. All right.
Yeah, Love it.
Sure. But, you know, finally... Let's close out by talking once again about how amazing Sinners is.
Amen.
Amen. Sinners was our last 5-star movie in our era. You and I went on about that movie at great length, and you know, it's still running in theaters, and people are still seeing it and still loving it. So I don't know. You look into that list, and we're like, is this the greatest era in cinematic history?
No. But it's not a bad or weak. You know, it's not. It's not evidence that this is an industry in decline. I think there's still, it's an industry in flux, but I think there's still excellent work that's being made and really exciting stuff.
Yeah. And we didn't even mention like a lot of the sort of, you know, mid-tier genre stuff, the sort of the horror boom.
Jordan Peele stuff. We didn't mention Us. We didn't mention Nope.
Both of which you could put on that list for sure. I love Nope. You know, there's just a lot of really good work going on in the movies, and it's been such a privilege to be able to talk to you about it, and to, you know, it's been an education.
Oh, likewise.
Yes, and
I'm gonna miss this. I'm gonna miss this.
Well, I'm just a text away. If you want to talk, if you want to talk shit about a movie, Steven, I am right there, and I even though I am going into a position where I'm not going to be writing about movies much, I'm still always available to dish on films.
Can we cosplay a podcasting and you send me a link and we can just talk through our mics at each other and pretend like we're doing
it? I mean, as long as Sea of Reeds Media continues to pay for this software, I guess we could. I think that would be weird though.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think it would be an insult to our professionalism.
You gotta turn the page and close the chapter, right? Or finish the chapter and close it.
And so we come to the end of another working day. Stephen Garrett, our chief film critic for Book and Film Globe. Stephen's going to continue writing reviews for Book and Film Globe even after I leave these pages. But, you know, it won't be the same. It won't be the same without me.
Of course it won't.
I'm irrepressible. I'm irresponsible.
The lead on the articles is definitely not going to be as good as you've made them. Your zingers, those are pretty good.
I do what I can to entertain the people and to and thank you so much for not using passive voice in your reviews. It's been easy to edit.
It was very much appreciated.
All right,
is that passive?
God, all right, you're fired. Stephen Garrett, thank you so much. I will talk to you off air very soon. All right, thank you so much, Stephen Garrett. The Phoenician Scheme and Ballerina are currently in theaters, and all those other movies we talked about are available to watch one way or another on some streaming service or some revival house. Go to the movies, watch movies, enjoy TV, and enjoy, please, keep reading books. Those are the three pillars of Book and Film Globe at www.bookandfilmglobe.com. It has been an extremely delightful tenure for me at this website. I have enjoyed this job so much, and I'm extremely grateful to Ken Curson and Kevin Sanders at Sea of Reeds Media for giving me the opportunity to have my own publication, to have my own podcast, and to be able to discuss things I care about and a voice that I can tolerate, and just to support me in my endeavors in a time where independent media is struggling and media in general is struggling. It has really been a treat and really been an honor to be the editor of this publication. I also wanted to thank Matthew Sheffer for doing incredible work editing this show. We've had all kinds of sound difficulties. I've been all kinds of time overruns like this. This week we're going overtime because it's our final episode and we're just gonna run it. But thank you so much to Matt and to Kevin and to Ken and to all my contributors at Book and Film Globe. Too many to name. You all have just done such incredible work, and it's been such a privilege to be at the head of this. What did Ken call it recently? He called it the Dirty Dozen. It's been a band. We're a band of misfits here at Book and Film Globe. This is not the group you'd expect to put out what I consider the best publication, the best culture publication on the internet. It's been such a treat, and I thank all of you for reading the site and for listening to the show and for being my virtual friends. I'm Neil Pollack. This is my final transmission. Signing off. Take care.
Original production.